Hello, welcome reader. I'm Alex.
I'm Kelly.
And this is
the Lit Joy Podcast.
We are back with another very informative and helpful podcast episode where we will talk about our favorite books to movies.
Which this is informative. It's great.
It's fun. I think if it gets more people to read books and watch movies, like I feel like we've done our job.
Because we've talked how much we just love stories and storytelling in whatever form it is. If it's a play, movie, books, literally listening to someone tell us a story, we love collecting those.
Yes.
And then we love analyzing them.
And chitty chat about them.
Yeah. So here's the tea on our book to movie adaptions.
Okay. I feel like last episode we were chatting about this. We ended talking about Lord of the Rings a little bit and didn't really get into it. And I feel like that's such an epic series that we probably should say something about it.
Yes. It was interesting because when I was kind of researching for this list and looking at what people have deemed some of their worst or some of their best movie adaptions, The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings showed up on both lists multiple times. So I thought that was interesting that some people are like, best adaptation ever. And then at the same time, everyone's like, worst adaptation ever. And I get it because Lord of the Rings, it's epic. It's one of the most epic fantasies. I know they had to cut so much out.
Oh, yeah, for
like,
sure.
I haven't read them yet. I'm actually starting this year. I've read The Hobbit, and then they made that one into three movies, which I was like, interesting choice. Because it very much, in my mind, deviated from the book in the spirit of it.
Okay, so The Hobbit as a read was different, you felt like.
Oh, yes. It was a much lighter, almost like childlike read.
Yes.
I mean, the songs that they're singing in between, they're just on this cute little journey is what it feels like.
Maybe it felt more middle grade than, okay.
I mean, what they did with the films was fantastic.
Oh, yes.
They're just completely separate in my mind. So I don't compare them often. So I'm like, I get why people don't always love that adaption, because if you're comparing it to the book, I'm all, oh, they created something completely different.
Yes.
Fabulous, but different. And then in Lord of the Rings, though, have you read through the whole series?
No, only The Fellowship. So this year I'm continuing on too, since we're starting it for book club.
Yeah. It's, and it's funny because watching the movies, I feel like I've watched the whole series probably 5 times now.
Yeah.
And I still have to ask questions to my husband who's read the series. I bet he's just like, please, for the love of God, read the series yourself. Because I've asked so many, I'm like, pause. I'm like, no, wait, why did this happen? How did Gandalf just magically reappear?
I know.
Why is he different color? Like, I had all these questions and I'm like, and why aren't there like protective rails on these staircases?
100%. Number one question is like, was this the most effective way to live underground?
I know. They're always like barely not falling off the edge. And there's, and I'm like, why is this? Never mind. I have safety regulation questions. But in regards to the books, I can only imagine how much more is in them if I can barely grasp what's happening in the movies, right? Because I don't have all the context.
So one thing that's funny is just, I can only speak to the first movie, first book. But I did, I'm like a sucker for a great edit. And so if something can be one half the length, but a fantastic editing, like I find a lot of praise and joy in that. But I also understand that with Tolkien, he wasn't just writing for this really tidy plot and 120,000 word count. Like he wasn't writing for the, like the modern fantasy reader. Yeah. He was definitely writing for the epic genre and in many ways defined the genre of epic fantasy with his work. And so, I mean, I think people would argue he is kind of like one of the fathers of epic fantasy. And so all the side quests is really part of what you miss, right? It's like that main plot that runs through it is where all the films focus, but those side quests kind of get taken out. I did find in The Fellowship, you meet Tom Bombadil.
And
he kind of pops up as like a fun moment. I think in the Hobbit trilogy, it's like they had to have like justice for him or like, you know, reconciliation for cutting him out.
Yeah.
Because he was a fun part of the first book. But that's the only one I've read. So we'll have to do, I think we should do the full read of all four.
Yeah.
And then we should do an episode just on Lord of the Rings because they're so epic that nobody was going to be able to do them perfectly. It's like an impossible task to get an A++ on representing such an intense and amazing epic fantasy trilogy. So
for real.
And so many people, it's like their childhood
Yeah.
And so the expectations are higher than anyone can truly accomplish. Mm-hmm. Now, as like an addendum to this conversation, yes, I want to chat about what you felt like the Amazon series, how did you enjoy what the Amazon series did with the idea of the world of Tolkien? Because it's part of the Silmarillion, right? Is what it was part of the inspiration for the Amazon series.
Oh, goodness. I'm trying to remember now. I did watch it. Was this in 2022 when it came out?
Yes. It's been within the last year and a half kind of a thing.
It was, I'm trying to remember now. It was like a prequel is what's happening.
Yes.
It's like way before it ever happened. And so you're getting a lot more information about, if I remember right, like the elves and the dwarves and how it all began. Yes. Before the ring existed.
Correct.
Right. Okay. It's all coming, yes, back to
and
me.
Also, you know, like the little like kingdom that Frodo like sails off to. That's the eternal land of like the elves. It's like their heaven. Mm-hmm. So you kind of get bits of that. You get a little bit of backstory about Mordor, about Sauron, the whole thing. And so it's very interesting. You get backstory on Gandalf.
It was a delight. Like I
enjoyed it.
I did. I thoroughly enjoyed it too. I know that there was a lot of pressure around it. They poured a ton of money into it. And I thought, you know, the CGI and the acting, everything was great. It just felt like I couldn't absolutely embrace it the way I wanted to without having the full context.
Yeah.
And that's a me thing where I was like, I need to read the books to feel like I get the full Easter egg context hype about what this series is doing. So in one regard, I absolutely loved what it was, but I felt like I was missing some depth because I hadn't read the books.
Totally.
That's how I felt. What about you?
Yeah. I think maybe we go back and watch it after we read all the books and kind of reassess. That would be a fun project.
We have to read those and watch those for work.
One of the things I did love about it, though, is kind of had a stardust moment, like a fallen star. And I thought that was really whimsical. The TV series to me felt more whimsical than any of the movies did. The movies felt very epic and cinematic, but I liked that the TV series had a few moments that like allowed you to sit with the predecessor of the Hobbits a little bit more. And they had such a fun storyline and you kind of got, I mean, and I love backstory, but yeah, there were moments of like magic that you just didn't see in the other ones that I really enjoyed. So I'm excited to go back through and do a full audit.
Yeah.
And we can judge the Kelly and Alex of now, judge us of now and our, like our knowledge now versus what we will know then.
To be continued on the Lord of the Rings discussion, because you're right. I'm like, I think we got to do a full deep dive.
Yep.
It feels like it's time.
It is time. I'm like, okay, I think we should.
We talked about The Hobbit though, right?
We did
in the first episode. So we'll link to that to make sure.
Yeah.
But The Hobbit's another one where I'm like, did we fully discuss? Because that was crazy town to me that they made three movies out of that
book. I loved it. I thought The Hobbit was so entertaining.
Ah.
I know. And I totally get why some people were like, what the heck? Why didn't you give more to Lord of the Rings? The Hobbits did not need three movies. but I personally loved the dwarves in it and the main dwarf, his story arc.
Yeah.
And I'm excited. Let's come back to this and discuss it. Yeah. Let's read the books again and have like a full in-depth discussion. But I think I think it might be interesting for people out there to give us their take on their favorites and not so favorites. So maybe we'll ask our listeners, our readers out there, because it would be fun to do an episode and to ask them like favorite parts, least favorite, what character to movie was the best, what one was the worst. I love the tea.
Sometimes I feel like The Hobbit just boils down to an analogy of an extrovert who decided to ask an introvert to follow him on an adventure.
Yeah.
Like it's all about introverts and extroverts for me sometimes.
For sure.
And he's like, but I want to stay safe in my little Hobbit Shire.
I know.
And I'm all, it's me. I'm the Hobbit.
And I'm like, we're going on an adventure. Come on.
It's always good to have
nice
a friend.
Balance. Nice balance.
That helps get you out of your Shire.
I know. And I just think that one of my favorite casting and of all of the members, and we'll see if this is the same after the reread, is Sam.
Oh, yeah.
I thought Sam was such a beautiful character in the books and in the movies. So one of the best BFFs in literature of all time.
He is.
Really is.
Sweet Sam.
I know.
And that moment at the end of Lord of the Rings, we'll have to wait. But I'm just like, I can't ever get that out of my face or out of my face, out of my mind when I think about the movies when he first wakes up. I'm all, they're so gay for each other. It's all right.
It's a little gay. It's a little gay.
It's all right.
It's all right.
It's all right. Because I think it's just part of their culture.
There's just a lot of love.
Kind of.
There really is.
They're just so sweet and innocent. That's where I know people have talked a lot about that, but I'm just like, stop. They're just happy friends. It's it.
Even if they are gay, I don't think that Tolkien, I think there was like an innocence to his writing.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think he was like taking us down that path. It was just like, this is clearly what a best friend does for another best friend.
Speaking of Tolkien, I don't know. Is he one of the first authors to have created an entire language for his books?
Oh.
Because he wrote the Elven language.
First. That came before the books. Actually, yes. He started writing it for his children when he wrote Letters from Father Christmas.
It was like, fun fact, I took a linguistics class in my degree. Yep. And
he's such a five.
I had to pick a language to practice with, you know, dissecting and the linguistics on. And I was all, obviously, I'll pick something that's totally nerdy and in fantasy. So I did. I picked
the
Elven language and had to work through the different rules of it, but not my favorite. But I saw it's fascinating because there are books sold on his language, like the whole rule system to it. And I was just like, what other author has done this? Like, I'm sure it's existed out there, but just I'm wondering if he's one of the first. He's just a genius. So it was incredible.
Yeah. He was the person who did exactly what he was meant to do.
Mm-hmm.
I just love that you picked Elvin. That's Kelly thing.
Fun fact.
I love it so much.
Linguistics, by the way, even though it's all obviously in the English world, it is basically the math of the written word.
Yeah.
And I was not great at it.
You're like, and I wasn't happy to be there.
I admit, no. But it was such a fascinating class. So,
yeah.
Okay. We don't need to talk about this anymore. Moving on.
It's good.
It's all good.
And
what should we talk about next? What movie?
Okay.
Or what show?
I think we can pivot into drama.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yes.
Let's do it.
Okay. I put one drama on here particularly that I thought was fascinating and I'd love to recommend. It was Big Little Lies.
Ooh, yes.
This one is more adult. Leanne Moriarty has the ability. We've mentioned her before. She's in women's fiction. She is a brilliant writer. I think she's Australian.
Yes.
And she just has this ability, I feel like, to encapsulate a character so clearly in one to two sentences. The character will be behaving a certain way. It'll be described in one to two sentences. And you get just like this perfect little summary of who they are, what motivates them, how they behave in front of others, what they're hiding, what they're not hiding. And I would say they are drama, mystery, thriller, women's fiction. And Big Little Lies, I recommended this one because it's one of the ones that has received enough traction to have just a blockbuster cast. Mm. It's not my favorite of hers, but by no means is it less than a 5-star. It's just I have other favorites. And I loved how this one was dramatized. It was so good. It had Nicole Kidman. It had Shailene Woodley. It had a just like Reese Witherspoon. It was an amazing cast.
Oh my gosh, yes. I'm getting them all mixed up because I've read a lot of her books now. Mm-hmm. And they all have similar...
Yes.
Kind of
like threads ideas.
And casting and threads. But everything that she writes, she's got, like you mentioned, this gift to write these unreliable characters.
Yes.
And it's never just like the main protagonist or, you know, and it is all of her characters are equally like suspicious. They're all sus.
Yes.
You're just trying to understand like, well, obviously that's the mystery in it, right? She does a good job building that up. But you feel for all of them too. So whatever the resolution is, it feels like not like a victory. By the end of the book, you're kind of like, I am very torn on how to feel about this. And I like that she creates that dichotomy of characters to really enhance like this human experience that we have. Did that make sense?
It's kind totally.
Of, yeah.
It's like what she'll do is usually there's something that is known at the beginning where there's like a murder or a missing person, or there, or like a stalker. There's this thing, this event, and you kind of spend the entire book unraveling these stories that are all woven together to figure out like which thread leads to the murder. Like, how did this happen? So in Big Little Lies specifically, this took place in the book on a coastal town in Australia, but this one in particular is filmed in Monterey, California. Yes. And it's basically like all of these moms, the thing that all these women have in common is their children go to the same elementary school.
Oh, that's right.
And they have like a parent at the end of the year, they have school year, they have like a parent mixer where somebody dies. And that's kind of how it begins. You don't know who dies, you don't know why, how, but somehow these women are all connected to one another in this story. And it is an adult rating. Mm-hmm. Nicole Kidman's character was brilliant. She's married to Alexander Skarsgård.
Oh, yeah. In it.
And they're side note. Freaking toxic. Thanks, Kelly.
Sorry. I just appreciate his acting.
He is a treat.
I mean, in the show particular, he's not great, but
he's not okay. Great, but the acting is fantastic.
Incredible.
And the reason this made it on the list is because one of my favorite moments in TV acting of all time is the two of them are in therapy together. And there's a scene where Nicole Kidman has gone back to the therapist by herself. And the therapist, the way that she talks to Nicole Kidman is just the best therapy I've ever seen on film. Like, I get the chills thinking about it. Because a lot of time when you see therapists in TV series or movies, they're kind of just like going, it's like they read a like how to be a therapist when acting book like 20 minutes before. That's not bad, but it's kind of like a little contrived. Mm-hmm. But this was, I don't know if they had a real therapist, but she was brilliant.
Yeah.
And the way that she handled the conversation with Nicole Kidman and Nicole Kidman's acting in it was just like chef's kiss. I think Nicole Kidman won a Golden Globe for it.
Yeah.
But they were all nominated. All of the women in it were nominated. It's worth watching it for that moment if you love acting.
Yeah. I'm like, we're not going to spoil this one for you because there's a reason that she has to go back and kind of talk to the therapist alone. And all those moments are like, you're right. I kind of like almost like chills. Like it's chilling and haunting and it's real.
Yeah.
I bet it hit a lot of people, honestly, watching it.
Read a little bit of a synopsis before you go watch it as like to gauge if it's for you as like a trigger warning.
So do we feel like it was a great adaption?
Brilliant adaption. I did, for sure.
Yeah. I feel like, because several of her books have been turned into shows or movies, and I feel like they've all done a really good job of adapting them. Yeah. So.
Well, and she kind of has pulled Nicole into a few of them because I think Nicole's Australian too. And I highly recommend.
Yeah. That was a good one. It is a little heavy, but I'm like, great adaption.
For sure. Okay. On to one of my favorite adaptations.
Science thriller.
Yes. Science thriller is a category that I weirdly love. I'm like, I love science thrillers. I know that so many of our listeners are probably in the fantasy genre or like women's fiction or romance, but there's just something so epic about a great like thriller, science thriller, because how do you make science thrilling? And I'm like, I'll tell you how. I'm like, dinosaurs and Mars is like the two that made the list.
Do you combine them together?
Dino Mars.
Somebody write that.
It's all up to you guys. First up on the list is Jurassic Park. Jurassic Park. I was just like, nerd glasses on. Prepare yourself. I have watched behind the scenes makings of Jurassic Park. In a lot of ways, there's a few directors out there who really push the like envelope with film and film capabilities. Mm-hmm. So like Scorsese and Cameron. And so Steven Spielberg in this one particularly, they had originally planned on, well, first of all, Michael Crichton wrote the book Jurassic Park, and I read the book with my husband, who was like, immediately we have to read this together. And I was like, done. So the book is heavier on the science, and it was a 5-star for me. It's a great read. Like I would highly recommend it to anybody who just wants to be entertained for an entire book because it is very entertaining, but it is not nearly as cinematic as what Steven Spielberg did with it. And I thought he did a fantastic job of taking this really cool book and turning it into like an obvious blockbuster hit. It was entertainment for everyone. And they did take some moments from book one and actually incorporate them into the second and third movie. So you don't get everything from the book in the movie, but they add a lot more to the movie than was in the book. So when they originally were going to do this movie, I was like, thank you for coming on the journey with me. When they were originally going to do the movie, they were looking at claymation because they didn't have digital animation. Like at this time, like like George Lucas and like yeah. Ed Catmull and John Lasseter with like Pixar, they're all like trying to come up with like digital animation because it's like not a thing yet. Mm-hmm. And so Jurassic Park was actually one of the very first films that had like visual effects of that scale that were interacting so like obviously with humans because the claymation just didn't hit. And Spielberg was like, this just looks like an old film, like we can do better. Mm. And so the poor claymation department was like fired. And but they did, I think that they incorporated some of those same artists into creating the digital animation of the dinosaurs. And so it was kind of like the first time they had a few actual dinosaurs that were like live, like animatronics.
Yeah. I was like, I know they made animatronics for anyone they interacted with, I think.
Right. For like the like Jurassic or for the like Triceratops that was laying there, and then like the Brontosaurus and the T-Rex. But then for like all of like the smaller ones that were running at them, like those are all the animation. And it was just so rad. I was just like, I love when science films make new science to make the film. I was just like, it's like people living in their like best self.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
It's feeding the beast, you know? It's like,
it is.
Figure it out so you can keep making these amazing movies. And isn't it the same reason why, it's James Cameron. Was it Cameron or Spielberg that did Avatar?
That's James Cameron.
Okay, okay. Mm-hmm. I was like, same reason. He was like, I'm waiting for like technology to catch up for me to do the first film / second film. And I'm all, that makes sense. And Jurassic Park, the movie, obviously, is like a classic now. Yes. It is just like, who hasn't seen it? Actually, I know somebody and I was like, we are going to have a movie
Idiots. Yeah. I'm just kidding. You're all lovely people.
I don't know. It's incredible. We love all the behind the scenes stuff, clearly. We're always on IMDb while watching movies, learning like, did you know? And our husbands are like, please stop. We just want to watch the show. And Alex and I are like, we're just going to go watch it over here.
Yeah. We kind of just don't like invite a lot of people to movies with us. Because we're like, we'll sit by each other and narrate the entire time.
We get that we're not always fun to sit by.
But we're not always.
We think we're fun to sit by.
That's all that matters.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's true. Let's talk about the next sci-fi science thriller. Excuse me.
Yes. It could be. Yeah. It could be sci-fi because I guess it depends on this if you believe we've landed on the moon or not, or on Mars or not. I think humans have been to Mars.
Hello, readers. This episode is brought to you by Brandon Mull and the LitJoy Collection, featuring the beloved Fable Haven series.
One of the things I love about this series is not only are we releasing them one at a time so that more people can afford to collect them, but we also are doing this beautiful debossed leatherette feature on the covers. So it feels like your own magical field guide that you're carrying with you. So each one has a different leatherette cover with different designs on it. It's going to be so beautiful.
I love that.
And they're priced at $39.99 a piece.
And each book in the series is going to be available for purchase, as Alex mentioned, separately throughout the months. And it's going to be going all through 2024. We'll be dropping these books, starting with book one, which is Fable Haven. And that is dropping on March 13th to our private VIP group, our Lunacorn membership. And then on March 14th, it opens up to the general public.
Perfect. And if you want to learn more about these, be notified, or just shop, you can go to litjoycrate.com/fablehaven. That's /FABLEHAVEN. But that's because exciting. I like to just stay open to all the conspiracy theories because we don't actually really know. So
we needed a whole episode on like alien books so we can get into it.
Like Alex and her. I just feel like I'm very open to possibilities. Totally. I never really like doubled down on one. So
sometimes I just don't know what to be open to. But when you bring it to me, I'm always like, yes, I'm clearly. Like,
here's all the evidence based on Reddit.
So what we're talking about is The Martian.
Welcome.
By Andy Weir.
Yes.
And we've talked about Andy Weir's books before. We love his stuff.
Love them.
We talked about Project Hail Mary a couple times. But The Martian is the only one that's been adapted into film.
Yes. And I'm sure the other two have been optioned. Like, it's been a big enough of a success that I bet if we looked it up, they're optioned. Yeah. But if it ever really makes it to a movie, is like, who knows?
You know? It would be so good as a movie.
Well, here's the thing. I'm putting it out into the universe because I know for a fact Illuminae Files, Jay and Amy's book.
Yes.
I know it's that Brad Pitt optioned it for a film, but it's just, I don't think, like, they can sit for years and then like they can sell the rights over and over again before it happens. But I'm like, Brad Pitt, I know you're a loyal listener to the Lit Train podcast. And we would like to tell you should make Illuminae Files into a movie. I feel like it would fit right into that Martian genre. It's so good.
You'd have so much support
from us.
Well, okay. So The Martian, let's give a little history on this one, because Andy Weir's books are always so intense in the fact that it's based in reality with real science, but what also could be.
Yes.
I'll pass it over to you because I know
I love it.
You have a passion for this.
Yes. So The Martian was kind of like, I feel like his first blockbuster kind of a book. It was a little bit more of a breakout. Like he became more well known in the science, like as the science fiction, science thriller genre. And since then, he's written a few books that have also done really, really well. My favorite is Project Hail Mary. The Martian was adapted to a film with Matt Damon. Matt Damon playing the lead, and he is part of a crew of astronauts who land on Mars to conduct research, live there temporarily, and then a huge storm comes in.
Isn't he a specialist in like agriculture?
Yes. So he's like this, can the soil grow?
Yes.
Life, and essentially gets stranded on Mars during a sandstorm. They all assume that he's dead. And so they take off and he's not dead. He survives. Mm. And so he claims to be the president of Mars. He is a Martian. He has a great sense of humor. So it's worth watching because Matt Damon, I think he won an award. He was for sure nominated. I think he won.
Because it's basically like a solo movie. It kind of reminds you of like Castaway or something, right?
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Where he's carrying the entire movie. Yes. So if he didn't win an award, he should have.
Yeah. We will boycott. Just kidding. Where will we go?
So how do you remember how long he was on Mars?
It was a couple months. It was long enough that it could be for several growth cycles of potatoes. And so however long that takes, like, I don't know, 6 months. Mm. So essentially he had to survive on some food because you run out of food on Mars.
Yeah.
And he figured out how to take his potatoes that they had left over and grow more potatoes.
Yeah.
And it's just so awesome. I'm like, it's just science-y enough and very thriller.
It's just genius writing.
I know.
It's just genius. Because again, when it's all based in factual things, it's just, okay, let's put it on Mars.
Like, what would you need to survive on Mars?
Yeah.
And then that's like the premise.
And he doesn't leave anything unturned, meaning he gets into the nitty-gritty of just like how gross it can be.
Going to the bathroom in space.
Going to the bathroom, or what he has to figure out for himself, just for hygiene, for food, for sleep, like in just sanity.
Yep.
You know, so he gets into the nitty-gritty of like, what's it actually like versus something like Outlander, where I'm like, you guys have been traveling on this muddy, dirty road.
On horseback
in a dress for months.
And he's like, yes, I would love to go down on you. And I'm like, what? Yeah, book to movie adaptation, some major red flags with Outlander as far as personal hygiene is concerned.
I'm glad you knew where I was going with that.
I just spelled it out for everyone.
Yeah, we could talk about Outlander after this, but to finish with The Martian.
Let's put a bow on that.
We'll come back. I feel like incredible adaption.
Yes.
Slightly different. There was like a few tweaks, if I remember right.
Yep.
But I was like, totally, I get that, right?
Yeah.
Good tweaks. And it was really good adaption.
I think they kind of just upped the stakes in the film, which is similar to Jurassic Park. Actually, more people died in the Jurassic Park book, but it just was more calm in its like progression. So like, I feel like The Martian was the same, where like there might've been moments where two crafts are moving towards each other slowly in the book, but they're like careening in the movie or, you know, they got to make it more exciting for the big screen.
Yeah. I guess.
I know. I was like 5 out of 5, okay. Both of them for me on The Martian.
I agree. Riddle me this.
I love it.
In Jurassic Park, the guy who hides in the porta potty toilet area, the little weasel guy that gets eaten by the T-Rex. Does that happen in the book? Do you recall?
Yeah. So he's a little bit more weaselly in the movie. I mean, he's annoying in the book.
Yeah.
But yeah, he meets a fated end. For sure.
Okay.
It's not exactly the same.
It just felt like really dramatized in the movie, I remember.
Yes.
About how he like blows everything away and he's somehow left standing on the toilet seat.
And then he pulls and his legs are like, wow. I know. There was more drama. I will say also, Jeff Goldberg? I enjoyed him in the movie. Like, he is more of a main character throughout the series.
Okay.
Yeah, along with Alan. Mm-hmm. Like, there, he's more of a main character. He was great in the film, but yeah, so he was great.
He was so perfect for that character.
He was like spot on. Also in Ragnarok, my favorite role for him. But that's that's an aside.
All right, let's move on to...
Okay, Outlander?
Well, with historical regency, and I feel like we could throw Outlander right into here.
Let's do it. Boop.
Little off script on this one. Because...
It's like, I haven't actually followed the script very much.
I know, we're just talking about it. Okay. Outlander is a series I love, and yes. I started with the series. I hadn't really heard of much about it. The book series by Diana Gabaldon. I believe that is correct.
Yes.
Fantastic writer. She's on book... Nine in the series. And these have been going quite some time. Like the first book had its 25th anniversary, I believe.
Yes.
And that's where I started. So it's been out for quite some time.
Every time the word Outlander said, I just literally hear, sing me a song of a lass that is gone. Say, could that lass be I?
And I'm always like, yes, it's me.
Every time. And Kelly's like, I am Claire. It's I.
Sing me a song. Yeah. And what's nice about it is in each season, they theme it slightly different, but it's the same words depending where they're at.
Yeah, like they're in France and it's slightly more French and it was sung in French. And so
when they get to the Americas, it has like this colonial kind of drum in the background.
Yes.
And spoiler, they move around.
They're in lots of places.
But so I read the first book. We read this for our book club. It was incredible. Of course, we went over the top. We had someone come teach us how to do the sword dance. And we did, we had bagpipe player come. We all dressed in our kilts and our, you know, scarves and everything. It was really fun to bring to life, but it was very interesting because we did have a large discussion about kind of book to TV adaption on this one. And I think we all agreed that we're like, well, they clearly made it a little better, was kind of the general consensus. The books are good, but to adapt it to TV, I feel like they made some really great choices.
Okay, yeah. I agree.
Okay.
Except for Claire is so much more funny in the books.
Yes.
That was the only thing where I appreciated the books slightly more is because she has much more of a spunky, funny personality in the books. And she's much more guarded and serious in the TV series.
I'm going to weirdly say that's similar to Bella in Twilight.
Yes.
Like, in the
great
books,
comparison.
She was way less annoying than she is in the movies. Because in the movies, it's kind of bad. And everyone knows this. Like, there's some...
You don't have to justify your opinion.
And same kind of vibe where I'm like... And same with almost like Ginny from Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah.
It's that same thing where you're like, you left out the part that made her so, like, relatable. And like, not so serious all the time.
Like her charm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good point.
The charm got left out. I mean, you know. But that's their journey.
I was like,
overall, just the aesthetic of Outlander was spot on. It was beautiful in coloring, cinematography.
Oh, and we learned so much history. That's why we watched, right?
We were definitely watching for the history and not for Jamie being nude in almost every episode.
I mean, he had to have his shirt off for so many episodes. I feel like it was required.
It's like in my contract.
But no, this TV series is fantastic. Like, let me just be clear that I love the TV series, at least the first season.
For sure.
As they get going, I've watched up to season 5 and I kind of had to stop because I'm just like, these characters cannot go through another
difficult thing
where, of course, it's life or death or it's like being taken advantage of. Like, there's just a lot going on. And for me, I get a little sensitive. So I stopped watching.
Yep.
But season 1, book 1. The best.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the love story. That's like how they fall in love. Yes. It's enemies to lovers, our favorite trope.
I know.
Because Claire.
Definitely like forced proximity.
Yeah. She's a time traveler by accident. And she is in, I'm trying to remember what little town in Scotland, but basically she accidentally goes through the stones, but it's in like right after World War II in the 40s. She goes through and all of a sudden she's like 200 years in the past in Scotland.
Yep.
And just immediately gets dropped in and she doesn't know what's going on. And then someone who looks exactly like her husband shows up, but he's a red coat.
Yep.
And he is the villain and he is a good villain.
One of the best villains of any series ever, of all time. And the casting on him was perfection.
I'm trying to remember his name. It just like eluded me, but.
It'll come to me too. He actually played, Philip in The Crown. I think in season 4 maybe season three.
Yeah.
Season three.
He was also in Game of Thrones.
Yes.
Yeah. He's been a villain, actually, and villain loosely.
He's been a, I would say he always plays a very strong personality.
Strong.
There's no wallflower.
I hope he's won some awards, though, because he was incredible.
Amazing.
In that. And actually, all of them. The acting is top notch in the TV show. Now, the book, when I flip over that way, the book is much more a romance in my mind. And it's much more, and she actually, it's a sci-fi is what she's called it.
Not, yes, because of the time travel element.
Because the time travel. But in reality, it feels very fantasy, historical fiction. And so the TV series definitely dramatizes things a lot more, intensifies it, added like the spice levels up much higher than in the book. In the book, we're like, did they lay together?
man and a woman lay together, they did.
The way the wording is so flowery around it, I'm kind of like, I'm confused. Was there a
You're
insertion?
Not confused. You're not confused on the insertion. The TV series leaves nothing to the imaginations.
Yeah.
I would say.
So it's kind of like, again, the book I actually would rate slightly lower than the TV series on this
one. Right.
Although I enjoyed them both. Just for entertainment value wise, I'm like, go with the TV series, but know that it is very mature.
Yep.
And then the book series is more like PG-13.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I'd feel to say about it.
Yeah.
But that's a good one. I'm excited to, I want to read a few more than the series. I just haven't gotten there yet, but it is great. It's wonderful. And yes, I now have a giant crush on Sam Heughan, who plays Jamie, the main love interest. Emma, it's fine. I'm just going to buy kilts for my husband. Don't worry about it.
It's true.
And he doesn't have to ask questions.
A utility kilt.
This That's is amazing. TMI at this point.
No, it's good. We got to cut her off. All right. Moving on to the next one. My favorite Regency / historical adaptation is Jo Wright's Pride and Prejudice with Keira Knightley.
Yes. I think compared to the miniseries that was done.
The miniseries. I grew up with the miniseries.
80s?
90s, 80s, 90s.
Yeah,
Confirst. So 90s.
Yeah.
It's my favorite movie of all time. So it exceeds genre for me.
Yeah.
I'm struggling. It's just the cinematography in it is, in my mind, like perfection.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, every single, I've actually watched this film probably like 50 times, but there is an entire like editor's cut where they actually just have like the director's cut where he just like talks about every single scene and it's his voice as the film. It was on the DVD. I have the DVD.
I need to watch that.
I know. So it's the director's cut. Essentially, he just annotates like how we do with our books, but he talks about everything in the film. He talks about every single shot. There's so many details. So I know so many nerdy facts about that film.
You're like, I don't even know where to start.
Yeah, I'm like, the main actor who plays Darcy is like, has a deathly afraid of horses. So he had to shoot a few scenes where he's like on horseback. Oh. Like there was lighting that was off on a few. So he talked about how he had to adjust the lighting. He's like, you kind of lose detail here. And he's like upset about it. Like, you can tell he's just such a perfectionist. And so it was beautiful. He talks about how they have like one scene in there. It was the longest continual scene through with the highest volume of actors. So there's the one scene where they're all dressed in white at the ball and it's where Wickham doesn't show and Elizabeth is looking for him. And the camera has one continuous scene through the entire party.
Yes.
So everybody has to know their parts perfectly because they come in and out of the scene at just the perfect moment. Yeah. And so they had to act the whole party like as exactly as it was written. So there's that scene. There's the one with Darcy and Elizabeth where they're like dancing and then everybody's gone. I don't know. I was just like,
I loved it. It was such a love letter to the original book.
It really was.
It felt like it was just poetry. It was beautiful.
Yes.
The music was perfection.
I know.
The lighting. I know exactly what you're talking about. And there are a few fun facts that I don't know a ton, but I do know that the famous line at the very end where they are like walking across the meadow to each other in the misty morning. Like that line's not in the book.
It's not.
But it's such a good one. Like I see it all the time. I'm trying to remember. It's the quote. It's like, I ardently love you.
Most ardently.
Thank you.
And wish to never be parted from you.
Oh, and I literally was like,
he's like, I love you.
And wasn't he actually sick during filming that scene?
Yes, he was very sick.
Poor guy. He's like,
he's all, all right, let's go. And they like had fog machines. So like all that, they got it. It was actually, yeah. So when they were filming it,
yeah,
they had like the fog machines in there to get the scene. And he's like trudging. It was amazing. My favorite part, what I feel like was the most brilliant love letter to the original, was how they did Mrs. Bennet.
Yeah.
Mrs. Bennet is, in my mind, one is my favorite Jane Austen character. And I feel like one of the best written mothers in literature.
Oh, she's hilarious.
And she was perfection in the film.
Yes.
And in the book. I thought that that was who he captured most perfectly. So,
because she's a little silly, right? And
yes, very much
just,
so.
It, well, the parents in general are, you're, it's a little, one's a little bit neglectful almost.
Yes.
And a little standoffish. The other one's a little bit too into the, into their lives. Society. And pushing things on them, you know. But I remember the scene you were talking about, the continuous scene at the dance. I think I immediately saw Mrs. Bennet because she's like sitting up high and her feet are dangling and she's got rosy cheeks and she's
from
just
drinking
drunk
so much. And she's like eating ice cream.
Yeah. And she's just eating ice cream while like her ankles are hanging out and she's like, woo, with her feet. And that's exactly what I pictured when you were talking about that. I'm all, Mrs. Bennet's perfect at that. Perfect. Yeah. Oh, it's so beautiful.
She's always like, my nerves. She's all, have you no concern for my nerves? And he's like, on the contrary, they've been my constant companion these 30 years. It's fantastic.
I know.
I'm like, Joe Ray, I'm like, this is a love letter to you. I'm like, that was the best movie ever made.
It really was an incredible adaptation. And I know people always, there's some controversy, I'll say, in the bookish world about which adaption's better, because the original one of Colin Firth in that miniseries is very, very, very true to the book.
Oh, it's every word of the
it's
book.
It's like, yeah,
so
literally
it is
every
exactly
word.
The book. Yes.
Whereas there was some, you know, liberties taken with Joe Wright's version, but I'm like, it's the spirit of it in which I always use my judgment. And I was like, that's the spirit of the book. That's why we all fall in love with it. And it's stood the test of time, excuse me. And that's why we made it our first classic. That we produced at Lidjoy.
Yes, and there's a teeny nod on the back of our Pride and Prejudice to Chatsworth, which is the home where they filmed as Pemberley, which is Darcy's manor or his home, because he's a duke.
That sounds right.
Yeah, I think. So he, you know, you can actually go and visit Chatsworth, which we've done.
Oh,
like one of the
incredible.
Greatest days of our lives. I might have, like
100%.
It's in like the top three, only because, well, top four, because I think I have to put the birth of my children and my wedding up there. But if we don't count those, like best day was at Chatsworth.
I know. We started off with tea. Yeah. We had a whole tea experience with the crumpets and the cakes, and it was amazing. And the what used to be the stables, they turned into like a tea room,
which is amazing.
And then we just toured the house and the grounds for literally the entire day, and it wasn't enough time.
It wasn't, and they made us leave.
They found us in the gardens.
They were like, we gotta go.
Is it in Derbyshire?
Yeah, the Duke and Duchess of Derbyshire. It's their property.
Yes.
And so that's where they filmed it. And there was moments where you're like, I'm walking exactly where she walked. And it's so cool.
They have all the statues that they do in the show.
Yes.
There, just they've placed them in different areas.
And the little gift shop is really cute because they have brought in a ton of like Pride and Prejudice stuff. And not that that's helpful for the movie, but to movie adaptation. But if you're ever in the UK, like make it a priority. Also, Stourhead Gardens. We've talked about it before.
Yes.
Like, it's worth going down there. That's in the southern part of England.
Yeah.
So both of them, 100% worth making the trip. Mm-hmm. They were amazing. I just love this movie so much.
So, and basically what we're saying is it's an incredible adaption. The book is a classic, must read. But the movie, you must watch it every year.
100%.
Because we do that at least once a year, right? Just naturally. I feel like I rewatch that one all the time. There's something so comforting about it.
Yes.
So on our same Jane Austen thread, let's talk about Emma. We've had a few adaptions of this one.
I think this is also the last one that we'll have time to chat about today. So obviously we need to keep talking.
I'm like, we have more.
Yes. So Emma, my favorite is I loved the version with Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah.
And that one felt very true to the book, but there's a few other adaptations that are also stand on their own. Like, for example, Clueless. I feel like is a hilarious and clever adaptation.
Well, do people know this, that Clueless is a modern day take on Emma?
Well, it's a 90s take.
Yes. Modern day modern from anymore. The 90s.
We are ancient.
Whatever.
Whatever, loser.
It was such a good show. And it's funny because when I watch it now, I'm like, this is inappropriate for my children.
But for sure.
At the time, that's what was raising me, was like these shows in the 90s. And it's great. It's fine.
It's true.
It was such a fun version. And at the time, obviously, I didn't know that's what it was.
Yes.
But, you know, I learned it somewhere along the line and I was like, oh, genius.
It takes place in L.A., right?
Yeah.
And it's a high school where... Silver, what's her name? Silver
Alicia Silverstone?
Alicia Silverstone is the main, she plays Emma, but her name is Cher.
Yeah.
In it. And her best friend Dion. And they're just two really rich girls in LA who are very popular at school, which is kind of the story of Emma.
Yeah. It's like she has a big heart.
She does, but she's not always very self-aware.
She's just kind of self-centered and doesn't get the reality of the world outside of herself.
Well, she's always trying to play matchmaker and she's like, I know what's best for everyone.
Yeah.
And, you know, really she learns the lesson that she doesn't. Mm-hmm. And so I think Emma is another brilliant piece of literature. Jane Austen was incredible in what she created with characters.
Oh yeah. It's so applicable always. Like when I think about Emma, it was applicable then, it's applicable now. It's the nature of women in some ways. It can be
like society
out and society and mm-hmm. yeah. And it is so good. It's just a fun, lighthearted one for me. It's not as like, it is deep, but like it's more about just enjoying the journey with Emma.
Yes.
The book is good. I think I've seen all the adaptions. There's another new one with, who's the beautiful redhead, the big doe eyes.
Oh yes. She did The Queen's Gambit.
The Queen's Gambit.
I haven't seen that one yet, but I've heard it has mixed reviews.
It is very different.
Okay.
And so it's a kind of like there was another one of Dakota Johnson. And so she plays and it's she's narrating the whole movie.
Yes. I thought that was lovely. Honestly, so we can switch to Persuasion.
Might as well. Let's just go for it.
Yeah. Dakota Johnson in it, I thought did a fabulous job for that book. That book is probably my least favorite of Jane Austen's. Still a great classic.
Persuasion? Really?
I know. It's kind of my thesis. I know you love Wentworth and like the letters and you're such a romantic. but I thought that the man or her male counterpart that they cast was just the most vanilla. Like,
oh, in that adaption, I agree.
Dud.
Totally.
There was like, he was giving her nothing to work with. I thought she was carrying that whole thing. And I think she did a lovely job in that adaptation. But I felt bad because I was like, you deserved at least someone with a pulse.
Yeah. I don't disagree with you on that adaption. I was kind of like, it's all right. And the original one, I can't remember the actor and actress's names in that one, but it's same thing, like 90s kind of film.
Yes.
And,
okay. Yeah. I've seen that one. I know you're talking
sweet.
About.
It's sweet. It's just, I think I like the book the best out of everything. I'm like, the adaptions are fine, but the book is still my favorite on that one.
Nice.
And then like Sense and Sensibility is another one of my favorites. And it's 50s for me on this one, just like Pride and Prejudice.
Well, yeah. How do you beat Emma and Kate and their acting? They're just like two of the greatest.
Oh, and Alan Rickman.
I know. They did so, and Alan was so good in it.
He was so handsome in it.
I know.
I was like, I've never been attracted to you before, but I'm all, I kind of see it.
You're like, okay, I guess.
He had like more fluffy hair and he just had such a beautiful heart in it. And I love that moment where he's like, give me a purpose or I will go mad. And I was just like, and I love you.
You're like, I'm so into this.
Yeah. I don't know. When, you know, his limit just gets sick.
Yes.
And he's just dying to do something. I am just like, I felt that one. I just love Eleanor. It's a good one. And the acting in that one, I've never seen another adaptation.
Actually, no.
And so I'm wondering.
I haven't seen
it. Won like tons of awards at the time.
I wonder if everyone's like, I'm not touching that.
I guarantee. It's kind of a classic in that way. And Emma Thompson directed it.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that she played in it and directed it.
Yes.
She's such a badass.
She is an ultimate badass. I love her.
I know. So, there was no one else could do Trelawney. Like no one.
I know.
She was incredible. She's been just fantastic in so many films. I was like, and on that note, that we dedicate this podcast.
She can do no wrong.
It's true. I know. But let's, when we come back to this, let's revisit the Regency ones.
Okay.
Because there's so many historical fiction adaptations that I think we've got a bunch to look at, like Little Women, Jane Eyre, All the Wuthering Heights. So let's come back to these because we have a lot to talk about. A lot of feelings.
Oh, Wuthering Heights. Oh, geez. Yep. I know. And Jane Eyre. Oh, let's come back. Okay.
We'll come back. But we'll begin with the more toxic Regency.
All right. Well, okay. That's perfect. We'll end there and pick up for part three.
Perfect. Thank you so much for listening to Lit Dry Podcast. Please make sure to rate and review us so that we can keep recording these episodes.
And like a good book, recommend us to your friends.